I'd like to say it's good to see everyone out tonight, and if you've been here this week, I know that you've enjoyed the ones who've spoke already, and I certainly have enjoyed this adult class for our VBS, and hopefully I will be able to contribute as well tonight, and then we have one night left, and Brother Guy will be our speaker tomorrow night, so I hope that you'll be able to be back for that as well. So as you know, the topics were kind of assigned to us. We kind of went along with what the kids are studying in VBS, and I'm a little bit nervous. And it's not because I got an extra 10 minutes when usually we only go 25 minutes. Kind of got to stretch it out a little bit. But maybe it's because of the topics. This is not a topic I would have picked for myself. You know, we all have things that we think are maybe our strengths in life. And if I was going to speak on something, maybe it'd be one of those virtues that I would pick out. But this is something I need to work on. And so for that, I'm glad it was assigned to me. And hopefully I'll get something out of it, and hopefully you will as well, as we talk about mercy tonight. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 7, the verse that Matt just put up there a few minutes ago, "Blessed are they," we'll fill in the blanks, "merciful, for they shall obtain mercy." Well, what is mercy? It's defined this way with two definitions. The first, compassion or forgiveness shown towards someone whom it is within one's power to punish or harm. And secondly, compassionate treatment of those in distress. Compassionate treatment of those in distress. Well, there's a story that goes along with our topic tonight, and it's found in Luke chapter 10. And some have said that maybe it's the most famous story of all time, of all the parables of Jesus. All religious people know this parable, but not only religious people, but even people of the world have heard of the Good Samaritan. And that's what we're going to talk about this evening. We'll start here with the first few verses of this chapter. Chapter 10, I'm starting in verse 25. And here is the setting. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law?" he replied. "How do you read it?" He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." "You have answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this, and you will live." It's not a story just about helping others. When people think of the story, that's what they immediately think of. The Good Samaritan. We're supposed to be Good Samaritans. We're supposed to help other people. And it's about that, but it's not just about that. In fact, he says, "What must I do to inherit eternal life?" That's what the story is really about. It's the question answered of eternal salvation. It's the most important question. But in some cases, this story has become a platform on, you know, judging others based on how they help the needy. How does your church do helping the needy? How much do they give? Oh, you don't give very much. Y'all must not be good Samaritans. That's not really what it's about. This isn't a story about a beggar. Now, there are stories like that in the Bible. Mark chapter 10, verse 46, we've introduced to a man named Bartimaeus, who's a blind man sitting on the side of the road begging. Acts chapter 3, verse 2, Peter and John there are traveling, and they come across a lame man begging. Or Jesus tells a story in Luke chapter 16 about a man named Lazarus who's covered in sores and is begging. There are stories about beggars in the Bible, but this is not one of them. Unfortunately, sometimes it gets abused and it gets twisted and it gets used that way. There are a lot of people today who are lazy and greedy rather than injured and needy. And some of those people might try to twist this story and make it about that, but that's not what this story is about. This story is about, what must I do to inherit eternal life? It's the question that the lawyer asked. And Jesus answered him. What's written in the law? You're a lawyer. The passage says you're an expert in the law, and you're a Jew. You read the law regularly. You recite the law regularly. What does the law say? How do you read it? That's what he asked. The man answers. He quotes from Deuteronomy chapter 6 in our Old Testaments. Verse 5, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And then he quotes from Leviticus, chapter 19, in our Old Testament, verse 18. and love your neighbor as yourself. So here's this man who's come to ask Jesus this question, this lawyer, this expert. And he asks Jesus, what must I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus says, you're an expert, you tell me. And the man knows the answer. And you would think that's the end of the story. But it's not. This man gives a basic summary of the Old Testament. You know, you could summarize the old law in really the Ten Commandments, and then you could really boil all those down into just two things. Serve God and love your neighbor. And that's the man's answer. So he understands. But now let's go back to the text again and picking up in verse 29. But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, and who is my neighbor? In reply, Jesus said, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho. When he was attacked by robbers, they stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. It should have been the end of the story, but he wanted to justify himself, the text says. What does that mean, he wanted to justify himself? Well, by asking Jesus to define neighbor, the lawyer's trying to justify all the ways which he comes up short in the law that he's just defined. He knows what to do. He just isn't doing it. And so now, I've got to justify myself. I don't know if you remember being in school, but when you were absent, if you came in with an excuse, you know, maybe it's a doctor's note or maybe it's something from your parents saying this is why you were out of school, they called those excused absences. And you could have so many excused absences, but unexcused absences, you couldn't have that many of. That just meant you were skipping school. So I think what's happening here is this guy's trying to write some excused absences. You know, mercy's been kind of absent in my life, but I've got a good defense for it. I can justify myself. That's what this lawyer is doing. He's forging excuses for his absences of mercy. And at times, I've done the same. Excuses are easy to make. As I was thinking of some excuses that we could talk about tonight, it didn't take me long to come up with excuses of why we wouldn't be merciful to someone. You know, maybe it's pretty easy to come up with, and especially if you're a lawyer. He can defend these two guys, the priest and the Levite. He can defend both of them. Why were they not merciful to the man on the side of the road? Let's talk about some of those excuses. For the priest, maybe his church work got in the way. You know, it's been said, if you look at Leviticus 21, starting in the first verse, the Lord said to Moses, speak to the priests, the sons of Aaron, and say to them, a priest must not make himself ceremonially unclean for any of his people who die. Here's a priest going down the road. There's a guy laying on the side of the road. Maybe he's dead. If the priest touch him, he's unclean. And if he's unclean, there's a ceremonial cleansing that he has to go through. It takes a week. They're going to be short-staffed around the temple because he touched this guy and this guy's dead. He's unclean. Somebody else is going to have to do the work. I can't help him. I'm on my way to serve the Lord. Now, that may sound like a completely ridiculous excuse. And you may think, I don't know a single person who would ever make an excuse like that, but I may surprise you and tell you, you know one. It was several months ago, we came out on a Sunday morning, and I was supposed to substitute teach that morning in class. And there's a truck and a boat parked at the end of my driveway, and there's two guys back there doing something on the boat. And we get in the car, and my driveway's kind of blocked, and I sit there for a second, and then they go and get in the truck, realizing we want to leave, and start down the road. And I told Brooke, whew, I thought they were broke down. I'm so glad I didn't have to stop. And Brooke doesn't say anything. And I know when she doesn't say anything, oh, no, I've said something wrong now. And I look over, and she's kind of giving me this unapproving look, which is pretty common. I've seen it before. I think, oh. So we drive in silence for a little bit. She says, And what if they had been broke down? Would you have stopped and helped them? Brooke, I got to teach Bible class here in 20 minutes. Those guys ain't on the way to church. He didn't get up and put his flip-flops on and pack his cooler and put his boat on the truck so he could go to church this morning. I've picked the more important thing. I'm going to church. Do you think I've got time to stop and help this guy? Does it sound like somebody in our story? He said, well, I hope somebody stops and teaches him the truth. I'm the priest. You want to know which character I am in the story? I'm the priest. I know how to make this excuse. I've made it before. And the lawyer could defend it. Maybe he looks at the priest and goes, yeah, I know why he didn't help. He's got church work to do. That's too important to stop and help somebody. You know, maybe he was worried what others would think. Maybe he was worried what others would think. You know, there are a lot of people, I guess, that travel past my house. A couple of weeks after the two guys with the boat, I leave my house, I pull out, I go to the stop sign right there, just 100 yards down from my house. And here's this girl walking down the side of the road. And very attractive girl. You know, I'd say she's in her early 20s. Got on some really, really short shorts. They would have been short on Olivia, and she's 4. And she had on some heels that were a lot longer than her shorts were. And she's walking with her purse down the side of the road. Do you think I'm going to pick her up? What if one of y'all, half of y'all drive past my house? What if one of y'all drives past and sees me talking to this girl, and sees this girl getting into my vehicle? How long is it going to take you to call Brooke? What would somebody think if they saw that? 1 Corinthians 15:33 is a passage we quote all the time. Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits. What kind of person am I associating with? 1 Corinthians chapter 8, it talks about putting a stumbling block in front of your brother. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you have the liberty to do it if you cause somebody else to stumble. So I'm protecting my reputation and your soul possibly by not helping someone. Is that a pretty good excuse? You think the lawyer would use that defense for me? You think maybe he would use that defense for the priest? I can't help them. You know, maybe the priest was concerned for his own safety. I don't know how many of you have kids, but I imagine when my kids start driving, one of the first conversations I'm going to have is, don't pick up a hitchhiker. You see some guy walking down the road with a backpack and his thumb out, don't stop. He might have an assault rifle in that backpack. Who knows what he's got? You don't stop and pick him up. In Leviticus chapter 18 and verse 5 says, keep my decrees and laws, for the person who obeys them will live by them. Now, it's interesting, the Jewish religion today believes that this implies they should live by the law, but not necessarily die because of the law. So, in fact, their faith allows them, in some cases, to break the law if it preserves life. So really, I'm supposed to be merciful. I can use this defense. I'm supposed to be merciful, but I don't have to be merciful if it puts my life in danger. That seems like a pretty good excuse. That's a good reason. I don't have to help him. He might kill me. Maybe that's what the priest was thinking. You know what else? Maybe he helped the last guy on the side of the road, who got robbed and beaten and was laying there in a ditch. Matthew chapter 5, Jesus is preaching here on the Sermon on the Mount. And he says, if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. Well, okay, Jesus, he asked me to go 1 mile and I went 2. And then another guy said, hey, will you go 1 mile? And I went with him and then another guy and another guy and another guy. But 5 guys, now I'm 10 miles down the road. This has got to stop somewhere. I can't just help everybody. Maybe I helped the last guy, so I can't help this guy. You know, I don't have a money tree. I can't just give to everybody. Does that seem like a pretty good defense? Do you think the lawyer would use that defense for me? Do you think he would use that for the priest? Maybe he helped the last guy. He's got to get home eventually. What about the Levite? Now, the Levites were experts in the law. Nehemiah chapter 8, starting in verse 7, says the Levites, and then it had a bunch of them listed, which names I'm not even going to try to pronounce, so I've abbreviated here. But the Levites instructed the people in the law. They read from the book of the law of God, making it clear and giving the meaning so that the people understood what was being read. So the Levites were experts in the law. So why does this Levite not stop and help the guy in the ditch? Well, maybe he thought it was a scam. Maybe he thought it was a trick. Maybe he thought it was a lie. This guy's just trying to scam me for money. You know, people knock on your door, if they do like they knock on mine, and you open the door and there's always some spill. They've got something to sell, you know, something that you need. I don't know, maybe it's cleaning solutions or vacuums or, you know, life insurance, health insurance, death insurance, pet insurance, magazines, books, whatever it is. They've always got something to sell. Or maybe they need gas. They broke down. I need some gas. Can you give me some gas money? You know, if you drive by my house at night, it looks like a, I don't know, prison or a ball field. I don't know which one. I have all the floodlights turned on. We used to have a problem with skunks. Everybody asked, why do you always leave the floodlights on? We used to have a problem with skunks, and skunks don't like light, so I leave the lights on. Well, sometimes you get some other unwelcome guests late at night because you've left the lights on. And people feel comfortable pulling in your driveway at 8 or 9 or 10 o'clock. We had one knock on the door at almost midnight one night, banging on the door, yelling, I need $2 for some gas. Can you help me? You know better. Nobody knocks on your door at midnight needing $2 for some gas, do they? Probably need it for some drugs. That guy sitting on the side of the road saying, hey, I just need a couple dollars to help me, please. And you're probably thinking, that money's going to drugs or alcohol or something else. A recent survey in big cities among homeless people found that 93% of that money goes to drugs or alcohol or prostitution. That thought you have of, hey, the money's probably going to something bad, it probably is. Isn't that a good reason not to give? Isn't that a good excuse? That would be a pretty good defense, isn't it? You know what? Maybe the Levite thought, there's already programs in place. Mark chapter 12, Jesus says to them, give to Caesar what is Caesar and to God's what is God's. So maybe a person thinks, I pay my taxes, I put money in the church plate, and there's government programs to help people, and there's church programs that help people, so I'm already doing my part. That's a pretty good excuse, isn't it? You're already doing it. Why would I have to do any more? Maybe he thought the guy was lazy. 2 Thessalonians 3, verse 10, for even when I was with you, we gave you this rule, the one who is unwilling to work shall not eat. Get a job and quit being a burden on others. Maybe that's what he thought. Maybe that's what the Levite's defense. I've got a job. I have to work. Why don't you do the same? You think a homeless person or somebody in need ever hears that? Get a job. You're lazy. Maybe the Levite thought the guy was getting exactly what he deserved. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 29. Since they hated knowledge and did not choose to fear the Lord, since they would not accept my advice and spurned my rebuke, they will eat the fruit of their ways and be filled with the fruit of their schemes. You wouldn't be here if you made better choices. You know, I've talked in the 20s age class to them about a homeless guy that Matt and I have had some correspondence with over the last year. And if you go up to the Chevron up there near Cracker Barrel, during daylight hours, you're going to see him. If it's raining, he'll be sitting in front on the covered area. And if it's not, he'll be sitting around back with a sign trying to get people who are going in and out of Wits, or Lawlers. I think that's Lawlers. And so we stopped and talked to him one day in August. And he said, man, I just need a few bucks. I said, you know what? I'm getting me some barbecue. I'll get you some. And so we did. And I got his phone number, and we started corresponding. I tried to encourage him to go to church and meet some people who would help him. And he wasn't interested in that. But he said, you know what? I need a place to stay. Well, for about $25, you can put somebody up at the Mark Motel, which is where he likes to stay. And we did that a few times. I tried to get him to go to church, but he just wasn't interested. He said, man, if I had some new clothes, I might go to church. Well, I actually had some in my closet that were new clothes that I didn't fit in. And we gave him those. And he still wouldn't go to church. But we kept trying to correspond with him. And after months of trying, he finally got aggravated and sent me a text and told me, why don't you lose my number? I fed you, I clothed you, and I gave you housing, and you got the nerve to tell me to lose your number in text? I think, man, I'd like to put a boot in his pants. And when I see him sitting there begging day after day after day, I think, I hope you don't get that $25 you need to stay at the Mark Motel. I hope you're sleeping under a bridge in the rain, in the heat, in the cold, whatever. You're getting exactly what you deserve. Ever felt that way? I told you I need to work on this. Maybe that's the heart of our excuses. Maybe it's the heart of mine. I think I'm better than he is. I think I've made better choices in life, and that's why I'm successful, or whatever you would say, and why he's having trouble and struggling in life. I think I'm better than him. Romans chapter 12, probably the best chapter in the Bible talking about relationships. In verse 3 it says, for by the grace given me, I say every one of you, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought. But I do sometimes. And then skipping down to verse 16, live in harmony with one another and do not be proud. Britt talked about humility last night, but be willing to associate with people of low position. I'm not better than anybody else. You're not either. None of us are. Sometimes we get tempted to think that, don't we? So are any of these excuses acceptable? Matthew chapter 5, verse 42, give to him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away. Now, that doesn't mean you have to just give unwisely to someone. Don't just throw money at everyone that walks up. We can be intelligent about it. What does the world think of mercy? Well, some want to do everything for those in need, some do nothing for those in need, and some make it their burden even more so. They increase it. You got a picture up here of a bench. I wonder if anything sticks out to you. There's a couple extra handrails in the center, armrests. This is called anti-homeless architecture. That bench is designed that way so that a person without a house can't sleep on that bench. And there are a lot of cities starting to adopt architecture like this to encourage homeless people to go elsewhere. Hey, some of these people are exactly what you think they are, and some of them aren't. Let's finish the story. Verse 33 in Luke 10. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. And he went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. Look after him, he said, and when I return, I'll reimburse you for any extra expense you may have. Which of these 3 do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers? The expert in the law replied, the one who had mercy on him. Jesus told him, go and do likewise. He saw him, and he took pity on him. You know, the world is full of hurting people. Real hurting people. Not lazy people, not drug addicts, but people who are in bad situations that they can't help. People in need. Do our fast-paced lives cause us to just speed past these people and miss ministry opportunities, or do we stop? Do we think about it as a ministry opportunity? You know, it's been said people won't care how much you know until they know how much you care. If I'm going to talk to someone about the gospel, I've got to show them that I care about them. And this person in need, who may be reachable with the gospel, I've got to talk to them about their need as well as the gospel. are we willing to invest? You know, helping another doesn't require that we do some grand event. You don't have to start a charity. You don't have to go build an orphanage. There's a passage in Mark chapter 9, verse 41. Truly I tell you, anyone who gives a cup of water in my name because you belong to the Messiah will certainly not lose their reward. A cup of water is not very much, is it? Sometimes it's exactly what you need. You won't see me get up in a pulpit without one. I stopped at Dollar General because we didn't have one at the house because I just needed a cup of water. It doesn't take much, does it, to show kindness to someone? In fact, kindness can just be shown with a smile, can't it? I miss Frank Kyle. I don't know what grand things Frank accomplished in life, but he meant a lot to me, and he meant a lot to you. And what meant so much is that you came through those back doors, and there was a man with a smile on his face. And he would shake your hand, and he would hug your neck, and he loved your children. And he just expressed kindness. And it didn't cost a dime. It didn't cost anything. It doesn't cost us anything to smile and to be kind to someone, rather than just walking past on the other side of the road. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. Are we willing to personally invest? 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, Paul says this, verse 8, "So we cared for you because we loved you so much. We were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well." Paul says, "I put everything into you. I shared with you the gospel, which was the greatest thing of all, but I gave you myself. I invested everything in you." Are we willing to do the same with our time? Investing in somebody else takes time. It takes effort. Are you willing to put your effort into somebody else, maybe even a stranger? Sometimes it'll take money. It may take resources, you know, using your contacts, using people you know to help someone else for the sake of the gospel. Are you willing to invest the gospel in somebody else, to sow that seed into somebody else? Evangelism without empathy is ineffective. I can talk to anybody who's in need about the gospel. Hey, I see that you're in need, but let's talk about the gospel. And they're going to turn me off pretty quick. It's ineffective. It's not an effective method. But let me tell you something else. Empathy without evangelism is pointless. You read it correctly. It's pointless. People would be horrified that I said that. What do you mean? You mean if I try to help someone and I don't talk to them about the gospel, that's pointless? Eternally speaking, yeah. Let's just say we feed every mouth in the world and clothe every back and put a shelter over every head in the world, and we don't teach a single person the gospel. Eternally, we've done nothing. We've done nothing. We haven't changed the eternal fate of a single person. So should we talk to people about the gospel? Yes, but if we can't be sympathetic to their needs, it's going to be empathetic or ineffective. But empathy without evangelism is pointless. You know, one of the things that people talk about is, I give my money to this group, you know, this institution, and they take care of the work. Who's teaching the gospel in that scenario? You're taking all the power out of your hands, put it in the hands of somebody else. I'm not saying that organization doesn't do a good job, I'm saying you've lost your ability to be of influence with the good work you're doing. You've put that in the hands of an organization and let them do what they want to do and teach what they want to teach. And hopefully it's the truth, but it might not be. Are we willing to see others, to even notice them? You know, you pull off the interstate and the guy's sitting there on the side of the road with the sign and the light's red and you have to stop. Do you look over? Or you just kind of stay focused on that light? Just hurry up and turn green so I don't have to talk to this guy. Maybe he won't knock on my window. I don't even want to see him. You ever been like that? Philippians 2, verse 4. Didn't you use this verse last night? I think you did. I'm going to use the Living Translation of the same verse. Don't look out only for your own interests, but take an interest in others too. Take an interest in others too. Are we willing to take an interest in other people, or am I the lawyer looking for the loopholes? I don't have to do this. It's not really necessary. There's some good reasons why I shouldn't. Is that us, looking for the loopholes? Are we being good stewards? That's a question perhaps we should ask. Can we be trusted in all things? Luke chapter 16, there's a really unique parable there at the beginning of the chapter. And I'm going to, because of time, skip down to the application of the parable, which starts about verse 8. But we'll pick up in verse 9. This is the parable of the shrewd manager. And you get to the application in verse 9, it says, here's the lesson. Use your worldly resources to benefit others and make friends. Your translation may say it a little different, but that's the basic idea. Use these resources that you have to make friends. And then you get down to verse 11, and if you are untrustworthy about worldly wealth, who will trust you with the true riches of heaven? You think you've been blessed and you think you've got wealth and maybe it's because of your hard work or something like that. Everything we have is God's. He gave it to us. He trusted us with it. What are we going to do with it? Are we going to help somebody else with it? And looking at the application of the verse, if I can't even be trusted with worldly wealth, with earthly things, do I really expect God to trust me with heavenly things? To be rewarded with spiritual things? If I can't even manage the things of this world, all that we have is from God. Looks like we have about a minute left, Hunter. This is my last slide. We'll be judged on these things. Matthew 25, verses 31 through 46, paint the scene of the judgment. And we're going to read verse 34 through 36. Then the king will say to those on his right, come you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you fed me. I was thirsty, and you gave me a drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me into your home. I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you cared for me. I was in prison, and you visited me. You invested in me. We know the rest of the verses. Those who didn't do those things were punished. The parable that we studied this evening is real simple. You want mercy from God? Be merciful to other people. It's that simple. And yet, it's that hard too. It means we have to take time and invest in other people. I appreciate your attention this evening. We'll resume when the children come back in from classes.